Good afternoon. Welcome to the VisionVest Live conference call series. Your host today is Mr. Arnold Machiel. Please go ahead, Mr. Machiel.
Thank you, operator, and also thank you to all of our listeners as well. Today's Wednesday, February the 10th, 2016. Good afternoon, and welcome to our VisionVest Live Dial and Discover conference call series, your backstage pass into the minds of the money managers. My name is Arnold Machiel. I'll be your host today. In today's call, we're going to be reviewing the past quarter, and we'll also hear a little bit about the current quarter and some thoughts from one of the management firms within the Harmony platform, specifically Manulife Asset Management. I'll introduce our speakers a little bit later on. Please note that this call is being recorded. There'll be a playback available on our website if you need to rehear it or if you want to forward it on to a friend. So the last quarter wasn't particularly kind to Canadian markets. The Canadian equity market, looking at the S&P TSX index just as a proxy, returned or declined 1.4% in the last quarter of last year. And that was in spite of actually GDP going up, just it didn't go up much, 0.6% in the previous quarter. Interest rates actually declined very, very slightly, but I seem to be sounding like a broken record every quarter here. I can't believe they continue to decline, but in many markets they did decline a little bit. The 10-year Canadian Treasury yields dropped from 1.43 to 1.39, so very small decline, but still a decline in interest rates nonetheless. U.S. markets did much better. They were positive in the fourth quarter of last year. The S&P 500 returned 10.91%. Now, that was in Canadian dollars terms. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. But the Canadian markets helped our returns quite a bit there. In the U.S., their real GDP grew quite a bit better than Canada's at 2%. And they added 292,000 non-farm jobs during the month of December, which was quite a leap from the previous month where it was only about 40,000. Overseas markets posted also positive performance for the quarter. The MSCI EAFE index was up 8.49%. So, again, that's in Canadian dollar terms. In their home currency, it was a little bit less. Looking at the currencies, basically the Canadian dollar essentially helped us in almost all major markets grow by almost 4%, 3.6 to 3.9% more than what it was in the local currency. For example, had you been a U.S. person invested in U.S. Companies in the S&P 500, your investments would have grown 7.04% in the last quarter. But in Canadian dollar terms, being here in Canada, it was 10.91, so significantly higher. So a huge part or a significant part of our return in the past quarter was due to currency. As I said, sovereign debt rates or interest rates during the fourth quarter declined a little bit or were flat or declining in most major markets. They remained quite stable around the globe, the exception being the U.S., where rates actually increased somewhat from 2 to 2.3%. Now, what did all that do for your portfolios? I'll just look at a couple of different portfolios in the Harmony pools. If you were an owner of the Harmony Growth portfolio, the embedded series, in the last quarter of last year, you earned 2.9%. And if you were a bit more conservative and were in the balanced portfolio, you only earned 2%. So pretty much doing exactly what we expect markets to do. The more aggressive portfolios did better than the more conservative portfolios. But all in all, they did fairly well. Again, not so much in this most recent quarter, and we'll talk about that a little bit further in a little bit. But in the last quarter of last year, still doing fairly well. What do we see looking forward? Well, looking forward, first of all, we anticipate that equity volatility is going to remain elevated. It's higher than it's been for the last two quarters. It's higher than it had been for the last about 3 years. And we believe that it's going to remain more volatile than it has been. That's going to lead to some periods of quite poor performance like we've seen in the past quarter. We expect that those periods will reverse quickly, but we'll see many of them. In addition, we think interest rates are going to slowly, very slowly rise, but rise nonetheless, and that's going to lead to pain for many types of fixed income. In Canada, we're concerned about the sluggish pace of growth in the global economy and falling oil prices, and there's a concern that commodity prices will be a drag on the economy. So we've brought in some experts today to talk to us about the Canadian markets, who we'll hear from shortly. Despite strong fourth quarter equity market performance across the overseas stock markets, we've also got a significant concern about China's economic slowdown on global commerce as well. So what are we doing about that? Well, because of our concern that equity volatility will remain elevated, we are seeking to modestly reduce risk where it's appropriate, moving to some more defensive positions, but taking advantage of lower prices as good stocks become cheap. With interest rates rising, we're eliminating exposure to high-yield bonds. And with a concern about emerging market securities struggling, we're eliminating exposure to emerging market bonds and increasing exposure to global bonds. So I'm going to turn it over here to start interviewing our guest speakers today. So today we have from Manulife Asset Management, we have Noman Ali. He's a CFA, a chartered financial analyst, and a managing director and senior partner with Manulife. He's responsible for the large cap growth mandate and a member of their Canadian large cap growth equity team. And we also have Shauna Sexsmith, who's also a CFA, and she's the senior managing director and senior portfolio manager at Manulife, and she leads the Canadian large cap growth equity team and is responsible for managing Canadian North American global growth equity mandates. And she's been with Manulife for since 1999 and prior to that had been with Altamira. So welcome, Shauna and Noman.
Okay. Good afternoon, Arnold.
How are you doing?
We're good. Just to clarify, I've been at Manulife since 2002, but I was managing this mandate when I was at Altamira as a sub-advisor, so that's where the 1999 comes from.
Okay, thank you very much.
More than a decade anyways, so it all blurs after that, right?
Yeah, it sure can, that's for sure. So so over at Manulife, can you actually, before we get into telling our listeners about markets, can you just explain a little bit what you and Noman do on a day-to-day basis on behalf of our clients?
Okay, so so we run the Canadian large cap growth portfolios for institutional clients, for wrap account clients, and as sub-advisors to other financial institutions like AGF. We manage all the products, all these funds the same way. We have an investment philosophy that combines top-down and bottom-up analysis. Top-down meaning we look at, you know, the big picture economy and macro trends and long-term secular themes. And then the bottom-up means it's the individual stock picking. So we run about $2 billion in assets for our clients, and our process really involves finding good quality companies that have strong management, a good business model, very profitable, good products, or in the case of commodities, they have a strong asset that, you know, they've got high-grade assets, which means they have low cost profile and can grow their production. And at the end of the day, we build a diversified portfolio. We have exposure to about 8 of the 10 sectors in the S&P TSX Composite Index.
Okay.
And our emphasis is on growth. So there's a lot of value managers and dividend-oriented managers or income-oriented managers, but our point is we're looking for good quality companies that can show that they can grow the top line as well as their bottom line in a profitable way.
So can you just name maybe one or two or three companies, growth companies that you would or that you do now or might have in the portfolio that our clients would recognize?
Yeah, so I'm going to have Noman give you some of the names that we've held in the portfolio for some time, and they really are sort of typical of the kind of names that we own.
Okay.
Thank you, Shauna. So one name that maybe your clients will be familiar with is Alimentation Couche-Tard. Couche-Tard is it's the largest convenience store operator in North America. They have around 6,300 convenience stores under the banner of Circle K and Mac. And the company is really in a very fragmented industry, and they have consolidated the industry by acquiring smaller players. And on the whole, it's growing through organic growth as well as through acquisitions. And they are very good acquirers and integrators of companies that they acquire. They cut costs and continue to deploy their earnings and cash flow through to further acquire companies. Roughly half of their earnings comes from the U.S. market, which is growing close to 3 to 4%. So we expect the company overall to grow around 5 to 6% on revenues and close to 10% on earnings through cost cutting and improving margins. So that's an example of one consumer stock that we've owned for a while. Mm-hmm. Another name would be Dollarama. It's a dollar store operator. It is the largest dollar store operator in Canada. There are 5 times the size of their nearest competitor. They have around 1,000 dollar stores all over Canada, and they're targeting around 1,400 stores over the next 5 years. So there's plenty of room for growth for Dollarama and just the number of stores. On top of that, they can get efficiency improvements as they get bigger through better sourcing and negotiating with suppliers. And the company generates a lot of cash, which they're using to buy back stock. So earnings on the bottom line can grow close to 15%. And that's a stock that we've owned for a long time as one of our top 10 holdings. So those are some of the examples that we look at and we've held on for a long time in our portfolio.
Okay. Well, those are some great examples. We don't hear the is it Couche-Tard?
Alimentation Couche-Tard. So
yeah, we don't hear that name out here much, but certainly Circle K and Max, we see a lot of those out here in BC.
Sure,
that's for
those
sure.
Are brand names, and if you check out the stock price, we bought it around $6 in 2010, trading around $55 now. We still think there's lots of growth. And the same thing with Dollarama. We bought that in around $30-something. It's around $72 now. So. You know, when we own a stock that has, you know, done extremely well, we may trim a little bit, you know, but if we still think that the management's doing a good job and there's more, you know, upside ahead, we'll continue to hold that stock.
Right, okay.
The companies are hard to find, so we hang on to them.
So now I want to challenge you a little bit here on the Canadian equity side. I mean, I know we live in Canada. We want a bit of a bias towards Canadian equities. But I mean, frankly, the global economy isn't looking that hot. Our commodities aren't looking that hot. Canada's taken it a bit on the chin, more so than some of the other industrialized nations. You know, should we still be overweight Canada? Should we still have significant exposure to Canadian companies? Do you want to, you know, tell me your thoughts on that?
Okay, so, you know, I would never recommend that you would be zero-weight Canada for Canadian clients. I mean, you know, just the currency exposure alone suggests you need to have some exposure to Canada just to match that sort of
sure, yeah,
you know, your assets with your you know, where you're eventually going to end up retiring. You know, I'm assuming most people still retire in Canada. But you know, to look at the Canadian economy versus the rest of the world, I think you know you have to think about the Canadian economy is sort of there's two components to it right now. There's the energy exposed provinces, Alberta, Saskatchewan, Newfoundland, and they've really been hit hard by the decline in energy prices.
Mm-hmm.
But the rest of Canada is actually doing a little bit better. I mean, low oil prices are good for manufacturing companies. The low dollar is good for exports. So we have kind of a two-speed economy, you know. So depending on where you are standing at the moment, things might look, you know, terrible or not too bad. And just The other thing I think you need to take into consideration is the Canadian stock market isn't necessarily representative of the Canadian economy. So if you take energy, mining, and forest products, for example, it represents about 12% of GDP.
Mm-hmm.
But it's 28% of the Toronto Stock Exchange right now, and that's after a big drop. So it's overrepresented in our stock market. And then on the flip side, if you were to look at, say, the consumer sector, you know, Canadian consumer is about 65-70% of GDP, but it's only Canadian consumer discretionary and consumer staple stocks are only 12% of our index. A large portion of consumer activity is just not picked up because it's either in the hands of private companies, think of, you know, some small boutique, you know, store on Howell Street or you know, hair cutting salons. These are privately held companies. Or think of, you know, anybody buying anything at Walmart or Home Depot or Amazon.com, not one nickel of the revenue or earnings shows up on the TSX, shows up on the S&P, but it is part of our GDP. So the TSX, you have to look at it for what it is, and you know, our conclusion is that you need to look at the Canadian economy in terms of, you know, the haves and the have-nots right now. And when you take the sum of those two economies, I think the outlook's about 1.5% going forward. In terms of the dollar, Canadian dollar.
Sorry, actually, hang on. Before you move on to the dollar, just one follow-up question on there. Reading between the lines, is it safe for me to say that one of the things you're sort of implying there is that your portfolio doesn't necessarily track the TSX index?
No, I mean, my job is to outperform the index. So if it were to track the index, that would be called an index fund, and nobody would want to pay me
right,
for that.
Right, right, yeah.
So, you know, our job is to outperform the index, which is to emphasize those sectors that we think are going to do well in the current environment and to de-emphasize those that we think are not, and obviously stay true to our growth orientation.
Right.
So if you want to just sort of get a quick snapshot of that, we've been underweight the energy and material sectors for a couple of years now, and we still are. We've been underweight financials for some time, although we've picked up that weight a little bit recently. We don't have any exposure to telecom or utilities. And again, according to our investment philosophy, we just think that those are sectors that are more appropriate to income and dividend type funds, not
mm-hmm.
our type of portfolio. And our overweight has been in the consumer staples, consumer discretionary, healthcare, and information technology sector. So we're not overweight those resource sectors, which are obviously having challenging times right now.
Right. Okay. So, yeah, so you're saying your thoughts on the Canadian dollar.
So, you know, some people think of a dollar as the stock price of a country, right? I mean, it's really what represents the country. But in Canada's case recently, it's less about the fiscal position of Canada, the Canadian government, and it's more about the price of oil. Global investors' perception of Canada has been extremely narrow, and so the correlation to the price of oil has been very, very high.
Mm-hmm.
So in our view, we think the Canadian dollar is somewhat oversold. I'm dating myself here, but I remember the last time the Canadian dollar was 63 cents U.S., and
yeah.
The economy was in much worse shape than it is now. I'm not saying, well, you know, everything's roses. I mean, obviously, we have a serious issue in the energy sector. But, you know, back in those days, the IMF was telling, you know, the federal government to get our deficits in line. Otherwise, you know, they were going to, you know, give a warning. We were about to lose our AAA rating, all those things. So, so having said all that, we think the Canadian dollar is somewhat oversold, but we don't think that's going to change much because, you know, we need one of two things to occur in order for the Canadian dollar to rally, and that would be a stabilization and some recovery in the price of oil, and or for the U.S. dollar to pull back from its recent strength. One thing you have to take into consideration is when you talk about the Canadian dollar versus the U.S. dollar, one country's weakness is another country's strength.
Mm-hmm.
So Canada's been weak against the U.S. U.S. has been strong against Canada, but it's also been strong against virtually everybody else.
Yeah, correct.
So, you know, the U.S. dollar has been a formidable asset class in the last couple of years. So we shouldn't take it so personally. If we get a pullback in the U.S. dollar in the general terms, or we get a stabilization recovery in the oil prices, we may see some recovery in the Canadian dollar. But we're not calling for that in the short term. These are still pretty powerful forces that are pushing our dollar down right now.
So is there anything you're doing to position the portfolio sort of based on the assumption of a flatter dollar for the short time, but then an increasing dollar after?
Yeah, so thematically, one of the things we've been doing for the last couple of years is you know, owning companies that are benefiting from having exposure outside of Canada. So, Noman just mentioned company Couche-Tard. I think something like 90% of its revenues are outside Canada. And we can go through the portfolio, names like, you know, the auto parts manufacturers like Magna and Linamar, or you can look at a T-shirt company like Gildan that's, you know, 95% of its revenue is in the U.S., and then, you know, on through the technology sector and some of our financials. So when we look at our portfolio, over 50% of the revenue of our names comes from outside Canada. And if you take into consideration the influence on global macro trends on the energy sector, that makes it 70% of our portfolio is really influenced by factors outside Canada. So it kind of ties back into that first comment, is that when you're looking at the Canadian economy, that's not necessarily a reason to buy the Canadian stock market or a particular Canadian fund. You really need to understand the nature of the market and what that fund manager is doing, whether or not the Canadian market really has, you know, Canadian domestic economy has an influence on it. So we have thematically been putting money to work in companies that they're domiciled in Canada, but they are getting a lot of revenue from the U.S. and international markets.
Okay. Well, let me switch gears a little bit here and just get you to talk a little bit about oil. Your thoughts on the pricing and any opportunities in the Canadian energy sector, and what you guys are doing about that, or are you just blowing it all off? What are your thoughts there?
Well, there's an expression that the cure for a low price of anything
yeah,
is a low
yeah.
price. So what that means is that when prices stay low for an extended period of time, companies that aren't earning a profit, not getting an economic return, are gradually squeezed out of business. And that reduces, you know, some of the capacity in the industry, and you start to get some prices coming up. So we've been seeing evidence of that process in place for the last year and change, right? It all started in November of 2014 when OPEC virtually declared war on non-OPEC producers, notably the U.S. shale producers, by saying it wasn't going to cut the production in order to stabilize oil price. So the evidence that this is starting to work is, you know, you can see it in two numbers. One is the number of rigs that are drilling in the U.S. It was 1,609 rigs in October of 2014. That's the month before that famous OPEC meeting. And we are now down to 467 rigs. So literally, we are drilling a fraction of what we were.
Wow. Actually, I had no idea that it was that dramatic a change. What year you said that was 2014?
October 2014. Now, that's just onshore U.S. activity, all right? So
okay,
now you bear in mind there's all sorts of other activity around the world outside of OPEC as well. So the number that takes into consideration sort of the global reaction to this price war on oil, if you want to call it that, is that the capital spending plans have been cut by $250 billion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what this means is less capital is being invested in bringing new production on stream. So even though we still have what's called a structural oversupply, we're producing more oil than we need or are consuming right now, you know, when you're drilling, an oil field, you know, the moment you stick the pipe in the ground and you start pulling the product out, your resource starts being drained. So you have to keep investing in wells in order to keep pulling out, you know, more oil. So if you're not investing in the wells, and that's what we're seeing, right? $250 billion in CapEx being reduced, you know, less rigs, you know, at work. Eventually, we're going to have that supply response. So it's not one of those things that you can, you know, snap your fingers and turn around on a dime. It takes time for this global response to develop. So it is happening. It doesn't feel like it right now because, you know, oil is still below $30 and it was one
right.
time over 100. But it is happening. So what our focus has been on is to look at the companies that with really strong balance sheets that can weather through the storm. Companies are slashing dividends, they're slashing capital spending, and, you know, in this environment, surviving equals winning. And, you know, what's going to transpire here is there are going to be there's going to be some roadkill, to use a more blunt term, in the months ahead, particularly in the U.S. where some companies have way too much debt. We have a couple of Canadian names that have too much debt. And as this oil price stays below $30 for an extended period of time, eventually these guys are going to run out of room, right? The banks are going to call in the debt, the bondholders, whatever. So there's going to be a crisis amongst a number of producers. We are sticking to quality companies that can withstand this period, because in the long run they're going to pull out and they're going to come out of it. So if you were to force me to make a forecast, I would say by the end of the year we're going to be sort of through the worst of the crisis and we're going to be looking to better times. We're not calling for $80 oil anytime soon, but we think over the next couple of years maybe we could get back to 60.
Interesting.
I would avoid speculating in the oil patch just while we're still in this, I think, very fragile time for these companies.
Okay, interesting. Well, so one more minute. Any last comments that you'd like to make to our listeners?
Right. So we've been in a bear market. I mean, the stock market in Canada and around various parts of the world has been pretty rough. The U.S. is just in a correction, but the expression is when the U.S. sneezes, the rest of the world catches cold. We've been in a pretty rough bear market. That's the bad news. The good news is we don't think this is the kind of bear market that is an omen of a recession or a financial crisis. So for anybody who has some cash on the sidelines, who's been thinking about the market and waiting for the time to come in, it's time to start. I'm not saying, you know, go all in now. But it's time to start. At some point, we're going to start increasing our energy exposure when we think this crisis is past. And I think it's time for Canadian investors to start thinking about putting some money back to work. The valuations are pretty good. And, you know, we will pull through this. And, oh, by the way, when oil starts moving up, the Canadian dollar is going to move up, too. So that home bias is actually going to be a good thing.
Well, that's interesting. That actually echoes very much an email I sent out to my clients maybe about a month ago, where I said, what we're facing right now, it's not like it's a pound-the-table, absolute screaming sale on companies, but it's more like you've gone to the grocery store and your favorite ice cream is on a sale price for 10% less than it was. Maybe it'll be another 5% less than next week. We don't know. But if you're going to buy it, you know, in the next week or two, you may as well buy it now. And that is how I see the markets, and it's interesting to hear you say something similar. So that's great to hear. Well, thank you very much, Shauna and Aman, for taking the time out of your busy schedules to chat with me and my listeners today. That's awesome. Really appreciate it, you guys.
If you have questions, please just send us a note, okay?
You bet. We will we'll do that, actually, and I'll just mention that right here. If any of my listeners have follow-up questions, please email me at dr.rrsp@visionvest.ca, and we will follow those up, forward them on to Shauna or Noman, and get an answer for you. To our listeners, we hope you've enjoyed our call today. If there's something you'd like to discuss with me personally, please just give my office a shout at 604-542-2818. If there's something you missed in the call and you need to hear it again, or if you know someone who couldn't listen in live but may still want to hear the call, a playback will be available shortly on our website at visionvest.ca. If you've received an invitation to this call by email, you'll get the playback details sent to you shortly, or alternately, you can call our office for a playback number and passcode. Our next call is scheduled for Wednesday, May 11th, 2016. Invitations and details will be sent out closer to the date. This has been a VisionVest Live Dial and Discover conference call brought to you by Arnold Machel, VisionVest Financial Planning and Services, and IPC Investment Corporation. As usual, any returns quoted assume funds are held for the entire period with dividends reinvested. Commissions, trailing commissions, management fees, and expenses all may be associated with mutual fund investments. Please read the prospectus before investing. Mutual funds are not guaranteed. Their values change frequently, and past performance may not be repeated. Thanks again for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you.